Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on the sportsvirus.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play. Today's guest is Barry Bloom from MLB.com. But before we talk to Barry, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. Now let's get to the conversation with Barry Bloom from MLB.com. Well, Barry, let's start with Saturday, a special day here at AT&T Park as Barry Bonds had the plaque put up. I know that was awesome for him and for the fans and everything. What were your impressions of the whole day and how Barry reacted to it?
I think it was, it came like a little bit late, We're getting to early August, and it's been 10 years exactly since Bonds hit his 756th home run to pass Hank Aaron on the all-time list, right here at this ballpark against Washington. And, I know it's been, a long haul for him to start getting the recognition that he deserves, regardless of what people may think or not think about what he did in his career. The numbers speak for themselves. The era speaks for itself. And I think it's great that the Giants have finally moved to, have him involved with the team and to recognize him for, the significant person he was in this era of San Francisco baseball.
I think he's enjoying this role that he has with the Giants, being more of an ambassador compared to being the hitting coach with the Marlins. Or do you think maybe he'd go back to being a full-time hitting coach again? What do you think is in his future?
No, I think, and I think he said it yesterday, that the hitting coach for a year was something he wanted to try in honor of his father to get it out of his system and see how he liked it. He had a major impact on the Marlins. A lot of those kids over there, Osuna was his biggest project, and Osuna has really developed. He was telling the story yesterday that when Jeffrey Lurie signed him, basically, he put a bobblehead of Osuna in his locker and said, "This is your project." And from day one in spring training last year, and I was there a lot, he worked with Osuna. Yelich was a lot further along. Stanton is always a work in progress because he's so stubborn. But he says he speaks to these guys. They call him like once or twice a week, and I know they talk to him all winter. And even talking to Donnie Mattingly the other day about him, he said he was uncanny with what he could see a pitcher do, calling pitches, seeing things in what a pitcher does, what a hitter does, and being able to communicate that to the players. Saying all that, I think it was good that he did it. I don't think he wants the day-to-day on the road. I think he likes this job being back here with the Giants. Hopefully, I think it's a three-year deal. Hopefully, it'll be long-term, as I think either Bear or McGowan said yesterday. He's, obviously a huge, ambassador for the franchise. And I hope they start using him that way in Major League Baseball, too, because I think he has a lot to offer.
You mentioned that it was 10 years ago that he set the home run record, and that was quite a summer, and you and I both were there covering it. You were with Barry every day during that. I was covering it just for a couple of weeks there for Sirius XM, and the thing that struck me about it was just the hoopla surrounding it. How do you deal with that on a daily basis as a player? But he seems to thrive, or he did, in those moments. Were you ever just amazed at how he was able to deal with that?
I've never seen a player, when you consider the last 5 years of his career, he dealt with a federal investigation. He dealt with, steroid allegations. He dealt with family issues that were constantly ongoing. He dealt with just playing for the Giants and being a contributor and hoping to get them to the playoffs and win. And then, oh, yeah, he's trying to pass Ruth and Aaron on top of all this, with a lot of people not wanting him to do it outside of San Francisco and taking a lot of grief from fans around the rest of the country, as opposed to here, who always totally supported him. So with all of that, it was a singular story to cover over the course of 5 years, and it was a singular person to be involved in it. I don't know that there's too many other players that could have shouldered all that and still accomplished what he did. But I think Barry's a rare individual that the more pressure is put on him externally and internally, the better he plays. The less pressure, he's not so good at. There's that great Tony Gwynn story. I'm not sure, we might have gone into this on the air before, but Tony Gwynn looked at him one day and said, why do you act the way you act? And Barry said, well, Tony, it's just the way I am. And he goes, look, we're going to the All-Star game next week. Just watch me and do everything I do. So he watches Gwynn, and he's fielding everybody, all the writers and stuff like that in the locker room. And then Barry does the same thing. Then he starts the second half of the season. He goes something like 0 for 15. And the rest of the players are going, what are you doing? He goes, we want the old Barry back. Stop acting nice. Just do what you usually do. So he went back to it, broke out of the slump. The next time the Padres come in, Tony says, what happened? And Barry goes, I can't do what you do.
Yeah, he couldn't. And, but it was nice to try, right? Since you mentioned the All-Star game and going to the All-Star game, here it is. The All-Star break is approaching, and Buster Posey's going again. He's a perennial All-Star. He's having an MVP type of season, really. I mean, he doesn't have the RBIs because he got off to that slow start there, but the batting average, the defense is really kind of off the charts now. What do you notice in him? How do you compare him to other catchers who have played the game?
Well, in this era, obviously, he's right there at the top. And, I look at him, and I always have. He's like Jeter to this franchise. He's the guy who, in the locker room, he's respected. He controls the players as they come and go. A manager always needs a guy like that. Jeter was that for Joe Torre and then later Joe Girardi. Basically a guy to spread the message in the locker room and keep the rest of the players in line. Bud Black once told me it's a herd mentality. You take the bulls, you give them the message, and they keep the rest of the herd in line. And, Buster is just like the head bull, well-respected as a person, well-respected as a teammate, well-respected for what he's accomplished on the field. I mean, he's done more in his career with world championships, MVPs, batting titles. He's on his way possibly to another batting title, than most guys have had in their career. And in fact, comparably, Joe Mauer, before he got hurt, and he was an American League batting champion. I think he was the first batting champion as a catcher in something like 40 or 50 years when Mauer did it. And because of his injuries, he's tailed off. And I think the question is, for the long term, as Buster gets older, what do you do with him? Because you have the concussion issues constantly behind the plate. He's so good at working with pitchers. He's like your team quarterback. And then, but you might want to have him play more first base in the long run because, you want to keep him out of harm's way a little bit more than you do with catching. But, I mean, top to bottom, the guy's one of the best kids I've ever met in the business. I just love dealing with him. He's, again, like Jeter. He doesn't give you much when you talk to him, but he's nice about it. And he's always, how are you doing? How's your family? I mean, Jeter was that way. I'd go up to him and I go, how are you doing? He goes, No, the question is, how are you doing? And he was authentic about it. I just love him. It's great that after the cantankerous era of the Barry, you have this era of the Buster to play off of it because they're just such different people.
More with Barry Bloom from MLB.com in just a moment. Do you want to go to the perfect restaurant and bakery before a Giants game? Why not go to the place where Matt Cain ate before he threw his perfect game? That's Townsend Restaurant and Bakery. It's true. I'm not making this up. On June the 13th, 2012, Matt Cain had a great meal at Townsend, then took the mound down the road at AT&T Park and tossed the first perfect game in Giants history. Your meal can be just as effective after you choose one of their homemade sourdough English muffins, scones, and breads. Townsend also serves cage-free Petaluma eggs. For 26 years, Townsend has been capturing the spirit of San Francisco with consistent quality from their family-run business. Serving breakfast and lunch Tuesday through Friday, 7:30 a.m. to 2 p.m., and brunch on Saturday and Sunday from 8 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., Townsend is located right along the Embarcadero at 2 Townsend Street in San Francisco. Eat at Townsend Restaurant and Bakery, and who knows, perhaps you can be perfect that day too. You know, we're sitting here at the All-Star break, and a lot of us who cover the Giants are just saying, what happened to this team? I mean, this is a team that people thought would compete this year, but there are a lot of factors. You know, Madison Bumgarner getting hurt might be near the top of the list or at the top of the list. What were your impressions? First half, what do you think this team needs to do to get back on track?
Well, the first thing I'll say is coming out of spring training, I didn't feel good about this team. And I don't think Bobby Evans did. I don't think Boach did. I think there was concerns. It wasn't a good spring training for them. You know, there was too many questions to be answered coming out of spring training. And I asked, funny that you asked that, I asked exactly Boach that question last night. We were sitting in his office alone after the game, and I said, I've never seen it to me. I mean, it's basically the same team, and you had like 58 wins last year to open the season. And then, and he goes, now a year later, you just can't do anything right. And his comment was, well, really has been, really started in the middle of last season. I mean, they have 97 losses since the middle of last season. And last year, a lot of that was a product of the bullpen. They fought through it. Pence was out. He came back in September and contributed. They made a nice run, got into the playoffs on the last day. They still only finished four games behind the Dodgers, who had like 91 wins. So, I mean, it wasn't a bad season for them last year. It could have been a lot better. But I think when you look at, you know, the bullpen, it starts with the bullpen. You know, during the great years, you know, you had Affeldt, Lopez, you know, Wilson was your closer for a while when Romo and Castillo were behind him. Then when Wilson broke down, you had Romo having a great season or Castillo having a great season. You know, and it was the same component parts through the whole thing. I think they're really the only guys, aside from Bumgarner and on the pitching staff, who actually were available for every World Series. You know, Wilson obviously not, but the other four, yeah, certainly. So, I mean, now you take all of that and they're all gone. And now you're rebuilding the bullpen, you know, behind a guy like Melanson, who's not a power pitcher, and it's a difficult spot for a closer if he's not particularly perfect and he's not particularly healthy. And then you're trying all these other guys, you know, the Guerins and people like that, Strickland, to set up. And it's just a completely different composure, even though you have what should be a, you know, a stellar starting rotation, you know, with the guys they've added over the last couple of years. But getting back to the recent past, your rotation was, for a long time, Bumgarner, Lincecum, and Cain. And then Vogelsong came back and was a huge contributor. And one or another, all those guys are gone. You know, Bumgarner being the accident this year on the dirt bike. But, you know, they were very short-lived. And I think a lot of it was pitching so many innings in so many pressure situations, what they call now high-impact innings over the course of time. This isn't a team that had a lot of offense. You go back and look at the offenses, they were great at picking up the Pat Burles and Aubrey Huff. It's another one. Cody Ross, Scudero trade. I mean, they picked up these guys and they all contributed, two of them, Ross and Scudero were NLCS MVPs after they came here late. They were golden with all this stuff. But as I said to Boach last night, when he was bemoaning the lack of power, I said, well, you won a World Series here in 2012. And I think the team hit 37 home runs here that year at AT&T Park. And Bonds hit 39 alone here in 2001 when he had 73 homers. And they still won a World Series. And the difference is, like Samardzija last night, he pitched well enough to keep him in the game, but he's still allowing 4.5 runs a game. If you cut that down to 3.5 runs a game, then with their offense, they have a chance to win. You know, if you don't, then their offense is not good enough and has never been good enough to win without great pitching.
Well, with the trade deadline approaching, and we're sitting here and we're going to watch Johnny Cueto pitch on Sunday at AT&T Park, you wonder how much longer will he be a Giant. He's got the opt-out in his contract. There are teams that are looking for a starting pitcher. He hasn't had his best year, no doubt. I mean, he's had his ups and downs this year. But do you think the Giants are showcasing him? You know, can they do better, you know, to make a deal, get a couple of players for him when you know that he can't opt out anyway?
Well, I don't think the opt-out in Cueto's favor is the issue. I think it's the fact that he might not opt out that's going to cause other teams not to pick him up, because he's had a questionable year. And people forget, it goes back to the fact that he missed most of spring training because he was dealing with those immigration issues with his father in the Dominican. And we kept asking Boch about it. It was one of the kind of the silent issues of the first half of spring training. You know, what's he doing? When's he coming? When do you expect him? What's he doing down there? They kept saying, oh, he's working out. We're watching videos of him. He's doing BP sessions. But it's just not the same as getting ready for a season. So he got here late, and he just wasn't ready for the season. You know, I suspect that he'll have a better second half because there's nothing wrong with him. He just needed the whole first half to straighten out. And to me, I look at this team, look, they've got a great infield. They've got Posey behind the plate. They've got the good starting rotation. They've got Melanson locked in for four more years, and you hope that he does better. Except for the third base and left field, those are their Achilles heels, and that's why everybody was worried about him coming out of spring training. I mean, you've had upteen left fielders since Bonds retired was forced to retire in 2007. He wasn't even ready to retire. And then, you know, you've had nobody replace Pablo since he left here as a free agent. And you can say whatever you want about Pablo's conditioning, and he was a huge postseason performer for them in 2012 and 2014. And they've been through a myriad of third basemen since, you know, he's been gone. It's kind of like the Yankees at first base post Teixeira. They've been going through one first baseman after another, and they can't find somebody to settle in there. The Giants are going to have to make a move to solidify those two positions, but they've got plenty of time to do that going into next season. I just don't see tearing the core of the team apart because you have one bad year out of seven.
To finish up, since you did mention the Yankees, I have Aaron Judge on my mind. You know, the home run derby, the All-Star game. I mean, this guy is just tearing it up. 30 home runs already, a rookie record. I mean, breaks Joe DiMaggio's record, and we're halfway through the season. I mean, he looks like he might even be on pace to win the Triple Crown, and he's a rookie. Have you watched him a lot this year? What are your thoughts about Aaron Judge?
Yeah, I watched him a lot last year, and since I spent the summer in New York last year, I saw him when he came up last year. And, you know, in his first game, he comes into the locker room, and he's huge, the nicest kid in the world. And I go look up at him, and I go, what do they do with you guys down in Pennsylvania? What do they feed you down there? Everybody who comes in here from Scranton Wilkes-Barre is, like, bigger than the last guy, and you're, like, enormous. And he's laughing, and, you know, he loves ribs and when he got the call from the Yankees, he was up in like Rochester eating at Dinosaur Ribs.
Oh, I love that place. I was a broadcaster there for 6 years. I love that place.
You know it. It's Syracuse, Rochester, and they have one in Brooklyn now too. So it's like, oh, so we just started talking about it, and I come in. I was at Dinosaur Ribs in Brooklyn. I took a picture of the ribs and showed it to him. He goes, oh, I can't believe you ate that. And you know, we talked about that I was there with my grandson last year. My wife was taking care of him as a baby, an infant. So, you know, we developed a nice relationship. But what happened was he and Austin hit back-to-back home runs in their first game. Maybe 2 weeks later, Judge was doing nothing but striking out. And then he hurt himself and he was done for the season. So then he came into spring training, had a decent spring training. I talked to Randy Levine, Cashman, Hal Steinbrenner recently. There is nobody in the Yankee organization who thought that Judge was going to do this. It's just an anomaly. It came out of nowhere. Now, whether he's going to sustain it over the second half of the season as pitchers in the league and they scout him and they make adjustments to him, you've seen it before where McGuire, there have been plenty of guys who had huge first halves of the season, Reggie, and then all of a sudden second half they fall off and they hit another 15 home runs. So it remains to be seen how he's going to do. Much like Sanchez, where the Yankees, he came up last year, had a terrible spring training. They brought him up in like May. He was terrible. Finally, they just said, okay, let's bring him up to the major leagues and see if he can play. And he had this huge second half of the season that almost helped carry them into the playoffs. And I don't think they ever suspected Sanchez was going to be like this either. So much of it is you have all the analytics, you have all the scouting reports, you do things with, biochemistry now, psychological input. I mean, anything you can do to try and judge where, not to use that as a pun, but not to judge, where a player, what the player might do, especially a young player as he's growing, and what he might do in the future. And it's all a crapshoot. It just really is. And the guys that you think are going to make it are sometimes the ones that you least expect to make it. And another good, as we close out, I'd been wanting to ask Sandy Alderson this question for a long time. And we did a 45-minute one-on-one interview session. I interviewed him for our Sabre group at Citi Field about a week ago. And we were talking about prospects. And I said, yeah, I always wondered, how did you evaluate Joe Panik, who played right here at St. John's? And, you guys drafted that year two picks before the Giants, and the Giants wind up with Joe Panik. And Alderson said, yeah, we missed on that one. We didn't have him valued that high. What else can you say? I mean, it's just what it is.
Yeah, that's part of the allure of the game, I think. You're not always going to know what's going to happen, and that's what makes it exciting. Barry, so much fun to talk to you. Great to see you, and enjoy the All-Star break and then the rest of the season.
Yeah, thanks. It's always great to be on with you too, Joe.
That's Barry Bloom from MLB.com. Join us again later this week. We'll be chatting with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle, our regular guest. We'll talk about the All-Star game in Miami. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com.